There's your cue to call in and take part in the Straight Talk segment here on Real Presence Live. 877-795-0122 is the number to call. You are also welcome to leave questions on the Facebook page for Real Presence Radio, as there are a number of different things that are going on within the region and on a wider scale too. But there is a local event that took place rather recently that we wanted to just draw the attention of our listeners to, people who maybe aren't very familiar with this local area. There is a small community by the name of Warsaw, about a half hour north of Grand Forks, a couple of miles off of the interstate in Walsh County in North Dakota. And there is a special place in Warsaw that is celebrating its 20th anniversary, the St. Gianna and Pietro Mola Maternity Home. They had a large celebration in Grand Forks with a mass celebrated by Cardinal Raymond Burke. So that was really a delight to have him with us, and a banquet at the Alaris Center, and an acknowledgement of numerous people who were benefactors to really help get them going. The building, it's an interesting story, was a convent and school as part of that parish, run by a teaching order of religious sisters. Forgive me if I get this wrong. I think they were the Resurrection Sisters out of Chicago. But the reference to Chicago is an understandable one, because at least once upon a time, people always said that Chicago had the highest ethnic population of Polish people of any city in the world outside of Poland. So, you know, with the Polish-American immigrants who settled in the Warsaw area and some of those neighboring communities, there was some great good that had been done for decades in education and parish life. In 1971, they had to close that facility, and for the most part, it had been sitting empty. And a lady by the name of Mary Pat Yonner, who had been a teacher at Fargo-Shanley High School and working with other charitable causes, was convicted with the idea of starting a maternity home and was looking for a facility to use. Well, here was this facility in Warsaw, which, despite its size, needed a lot of work to be done. And so a small army of volunteers got together in order to fix up the place. And if a person goes there now, really the peace, the beauty that exudes from it is such that one would never know that it had fallen into the state of disrepair that it had back in the 90s before that time. Just to say a quick word about the patrons of it, St. Gianna Beretta Mola is someone who has become increasingly well-known in the church, an Italian woman, an MD, who received a terminal diagnosis of cancer while pregnant with her fourth child, and decided to delay the treatments in order to not expose any risk or harm to the child. And so the child was born, and just several weeks later, Gianna had passed away, and that young daughter, Gianna Emanuela Mola, was on hand and has been spending a fair amount of time in the United States and at this maternity home in particular, and has a special bond with the people who are helping to run it, with Mary Pat and our brother, Father Joseph Christensen. And I know that whenever I meet her, it's sort of a fanboy experience, because you tell yourself, this is the daughter, living daughter of a canonized saint. How often does that ever happen? And it really is, I think, a thrill for those of us who have gotten to meet her and to know her a little bit. And so this place welcomes in girls, young women, who are finding themselves in a crisis pregnancy, to encourage them to bring their children to term and to help them to care for not only their children, but to look at the course that the Lord is calling them on their lives, whether it be to prepare for marriage, to finish their education, various things like that. And so I just wanted to give a couple of minutes and really tip my hat to the work being done by the wonderful folks and associates at the St. Gianna and Pietro Mola Maternity Home. One other thing I wanted to mention that was a neat surprise for me at the banquet: one of the benefactors who was recognized as a couple from my hometown of Napoleon, Deacon Howard and Hertha Hunkler. Howard was one of the very first class of permanent deacons to be ordained back in 1979 in our diocese, and they set up some charitable giving with the help of Catholic Extension that eventually funneled tens of thousands of dollars toward the recuperation of the and the fixing up of the facility in order to help them get off the ground. So they, Howard and Hertha, have three children who had entered into religious vocations and were really a sterling example of faith-filled family life for those of us who came to know them and who lived with them in my hometown. And they were recognized with an award, as various others were, for the contributions that their family really made possible. So kudos to them on that 20th anniversary of the maternity home. And Father, you're not very far from there in your current assignment.
No, that's correct. Just down the road, the gorgeous church there in Warsaw, and Father Joseph, who's there, is a great brother priest that we all try to support, and efforts that are going on there. I also wanted to just give a little shout out to the St. Thomas Aquinas Newman Center at the University of North Dakota in Grand Forks. They're celebrating their 100th anniversary of existence, which is a really, really big deal. And we want to give a shout out to Father Chris Markman and the wonderful work that he's doing there with his focus team and all the ministries they have going on there. But just encourage people to check online and check out some of the beautiful stuff and write up. And all
as well as the New Earth magazine, which had a feature story on them in the latest issue.
That's right. And all the past priests who have served there on campus and fantastic jobs. It's just beautiful stories involved with that. And then, too, I think, you know, as Brother Knights, Knights of Columbus, they put out a monthly magazine, the Knights of Columbus magazine. This month, the featured article is in regard to Michelle Dupong from the Diocese of Bismarck, North Dakota, who is making
a servant of God,
making her way through the canonization process. And again, they have this just powerful, beautiful story in there, and it's an encouraging story. I bring these things up to help people understand how the universal church and the local church, you know, how we work together,
right?
And incredible how grace is working in the midst of us.
I am hoping that sooner rather than later, the documentary film that Focus helped to produce on the life of Michelle Dupong will become available in wider distribution and streaming, because I think that's going to be a tremendous witness. So yeah, there are a lot of great things going on. And also, we should mention the bike race that is happening annually between the NDSU and UND Newman Centers, where they all come to Hillsboro and ride a common course in order to raise money for their respective facilities. And the Knights of Columbus, at least in North Dakota and in our surrounding states too, during the spring here, hold their annual state conventions, which I believe is coming up this weekend in Minot for the North Dakota Knights of Columbus.
And then as we're doing this litany of wonderful things, I'll give two more shout outs to people, listeners in our,
you know, before we do that, let me give the number one more time, because we haven't mentioned that in a little while. 877-795-0122. Please call in. We would love to hear from you. Go ahead, Father.
So just beautiful Catholic things that along I-94 as you're traveling in the area. So one is we had reason to be in Fargo this past week, we priests, and had the opportunity to spend some quality time at the Newman Center there on the campus of NDSU, St. Paul's Newman Center. And they're in the final stages of completion of the construction of their new church and everything there. And absolutely, absolutely gorgeous, inspiring. Anybody who's in the area, it's worth a trip over there to go, especially go see the chapel.
It's a little over twice the size of the previous worship space, so that'll be a great service for the community.
Yeah, it's so inspiring. It lifts your soul. And so then, again, head over to Bismarck, and I just want to give a shout-out to, it was a year ago at the Knights of Columbus Convention where we had our liturgies at the chapel there at St. Mary's High School.
Right.
Absolutely, again, just an architectural wonder, a gorgeous, beautiful
Our Lady of Victory Chapel at Bismarck St.
Mary's. Absolutely inspiring. And again, if you have an opportunity, have not seen it, I encourage you. It is worth the effort to go.
Right.
To go and visit that chapel.
If you happen to be there, one of the highlights for me is the theme that they chose of the nave stained glass windows of saints who were prominent in their youth, and so they encapsulate a scene of that famous witness that they gave, and then they give a sort of an inset in an upper portion of the window of them in adulthood. And so it's a way of helping inspire the students to think about what these heroes of our faith did at their age and how things were brought to fruition.
And so we, as clergy who are there, and I'd encourage the lay people, if you go there, have the opportunity, there's an architectural wonder that they did with the dome, where as a priest, when you're in the sanctuary and you're celebrating liturgy, and if you look up, because the way they did the dome, it literally feels like you're being transported up into the heights of heaven. It's one of the most powerful architectural experiences I've had as a person. And so, again, I don't know who designed all the things out there, whatever that chapel, but it is so profoundly Catholic, and it so respects the architectural beauty of our Christian faith and so forth. I just can't say enough to have people go and experience it in person.
Alumni of St. Mary's are permitted to schedule their weddings there at the chapel, and I'm sure that in years to come, that's going to be a wonderful experience for a lot of those families as well.
So it's just worth you mentioning these things that inspire that are out there in the area that as a Catholic faith shines on the prayer.
And it was a pretty significant sacrifice in order to build, you know, the way that they did there, in not just kind of a ramshackle, multi-purpose room sort of, chapel, but for decades to come, that's going to be just a shining jewel for the Light of Christ Catholic Schools Network there in Bismarck.
Each of those structures at both NDSU, St. Paul's Newman Center, and St. Mary's High School, we're talking about millions of dollars invested towards our expression of faith in God and so forth. And I was talking to Father Cheney, who's the pastor there at St. Paul's Newman Center, and asking him about, like, how do you go about doing this or whatever. And he had this interesting statement, which he said was, he said, the money and resources exist to do beautiful things for God. It's just a matter of actually making the effort to go find it and make the connection for those who have it and desire to give to something noble and worthy, and actually create that situation for them to do it. And that was such when he made that statement to me, it just struck me. I'm just like, wow, you know, we who are Catholic leaders, like you and I, were tasked with it. There's other lay leaders as well who to have, that's actually such a statement of hope, right? It makes you realize, like, yes, within the body of Christ, things exist, but so often it's just making that connection, connecting the person or the resource and thing for this beauty to come about, or this noble
exactly
cause.
So 877-795-0122 is the number to call. You can also leave a question on the Facebook page for Real Presence Radio. This coming Sunday, the fourth Sunday of Easter, has a specific title that is given to it, and that title is
I Am the Good Shepherd, Good Shepherd Sunday.
Right, because every year we use one of three gospel readings from chapter 10 of the Gospel of John, and that is the theme that Jesus goes with, I Am the Good Shepherd.
So how about this, Father Gross? We're waiting for somebody to call in, 877-795-0122. Could you develop the theme of Good Shepherd? And then I would like to look at the I Am statements.
One of the things that I like to mention when I preach on this basic theme is that in our sort of conceited nature as modern-day people, we sometimes think of it as an insult to the sheep. You know, like, what you're running us down, or you're considering us. There was that movie from the 90s, Babe, where sheep are stupid animals. You remember that sort of thing?
Yeah.
And so rather than to look at that, and the focus is what God as the shepherd is doing for us out of love, not out of compulsion, you know, like a hired person who has to show up or else they're going to get fired and not no longer have that job and is only doing it for the paycheck, but the shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep, who becomes the gate, you might say, who lies over the threshold of the opening so that if anyone were to come in or to come out, they'd basically literally step over the top of him. And it also is a resonating from the infancy narrative of Christmas, of how the shepherds are keeping that watch, and God honors them by them not the mayor of Bethlehem, not the Sanhedrin or somebody like that, being the ones to witness the choir of angels singing glory to God in the highest and on peace, you know, and on earth peace to people of goodwill, and to then be the ones who are going to Mary and Joseph and the baby Jesus in their, you know, temporary habitat there in Bethlehem. So, you know, think about how the shepherd is portrayed throughout salvation history, not only in that one spot of chapter 10, but in other areas of the Bible too.
And obviously, you know, with that good shepherd theme, we break off and you can emphasize all kinds of things from vocations and things like this, but it also fits in the context of the 40 days of Christ being with us, instructing us prior to his ascension. That fits in here. So he's being revealed there. And so the one thing in today's gospel, which... And then on Sunday's gospel, there's a key phrase here that comes up. It's the I am statement.
Ego eimi.
That's right. And so I want to look at this. It's a trigger thing. When you hear this, it should trigger you. And where it comes from originally is actually Moses in the burning bush, where, you know, Moses, God's revealing himself to Moses, and Moses asks, well, who are you? Or how do they call you? What's your name? And God basically reveals himself as the verb is, or to be.
Right.
I exist. I am.
Not something related to anything else. And just kind of a fun little tangent, Cecil B. DeMille had Charlton Heston voice God, but through a machine that kind of distorted his voice to make it even deeper, you know, more ethereal. So, I am that I am. You know, that is Charlton Heston speaking in addition to Moses in the Ten Commandments movie.
Yeah, so basically God's revealing himself there as existence itself. I am. In the past, I am. Right now, at this moment, I am. In the future, I am. Like, mm-hmm. he's a present.
And nothing else is without him or apart from him.
So it's basically the verb I am, and which we understand as the word or the name Yahweh, and which is the name that Jews don't say. And so there's all this ink has been spilled in mm-hmm. thousands of hours of people debating what's the actual word.
Yeah, and also we should mention that the U.S. Catholic bishops some years ago asked music publishers not to use the form Yahweh in songs, as many of the glory and praise hymns had tended to do, in order to be in solidarity with the custom of the Jewish ancestors in faith who did not speak the divine name but used other forms, you know, El Shaddai, Adonai, various other things like
that. And so then we come to the Gospels. And all four Gospels have I am statements in it, but John's Gospel in particular really focuses in these I am statements. Here's Jesus declaring I am. And the one that people probably really tune into is when he's in the garden being arrested. And he says, I am, and the soldiers all fall down.
Right, you know, the Good Friday Passion narrative.
Yep. And so there's something here. So I'd say at the heart of this I am statement is, it's basically how Jesus is letting us know he is God. God is he. And so then there's more than these seven, but there's seven traditional I am statements that we all kind of focus on. But I think I once went through John's Gospel and the others, I came up with at least 15. I mean, so there's more than these, but these are the traditional seven. So, like, for example, in today's daily gospel, it was I am the bread of life, right? Mm-hmm. So in there, as you hear this I am statement in there, so on the one hand, you could say God is the bread of life, or you can say Jesus is the bread of life, or you can say Jesus is God. God is Jesus. So this is, you know, how it comes together. And so these particular ones, they come to be. So we're just going to do a quick rapid-fire thing off, okay, Father mm-hmm. Gross? I'm going to read these to you. You give me a word back, how it strikes you, whatever.
Okay.
So the first one, I am the bread of life. What comes to you as you trigger when you hear this?
The bread of life discourse and how Jesus didn't mince words, even if a large number of the people were going to walk away from him and think it wasn't possible.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next one, I am the light of the world.
Yes, light and darkness are themes that are prominent in the Gospel of John, especially with the prologue that John the Baptist was not the light, but he testified to the light. And if you light a candle in a dark room, the darkness does not overcome it. So there's a lot of that as well.
I am the door, or I am the gate.
Yes, again, not just providing a place for the sheep to be, but being the one who is going to guard them and care for them.
I am the good shepherd.
Yes, to feed and to lay down his life for the sheep, because he's not just hired, but they are, you know, they are his they are part of his identity, part of his livelihood.
I am the resurrection.
That unlike the Sadducees, who did not believe in various spiritual entities of angels, or the resurrection, or new life, that there is a passageway to eternal life with God.
I am the way, the truth, and the life.
Mm-hmm. Not just one of many ways or one of many truths, but the singular form of each of those nouns.
And then I am the vine.
Mm-hmm. That we have to be branches connected to the vine, that we do not just grow by ourselves.
So obviously, like, our theology, our revelation is so rich, so beautiful. And this is the season for the I am statements. And I'd encourage our listeners, be prepared this Sunday for I am the good shepherd. But I would encourage people, just like Father Gross so graciously did here, actually hear these and then reflect, well, how does it affect me, or how does it strike me?
Absolutely. We have a couple of things to just touch on before the end of the hour here. And I want to take this second one here, a question that was anonymously submitted from a listener in Fargo. Thank you for listening. Hello, fathers. Could you explain what indulgences are? I know they've been controversial in the past, and I don't think most Catholics know what they really are. So with regard to various things recently, Divine Mercy Sunday or various events in the Eucharistic Revival, plenary indulgences are available. There are also partial indulgences. I'm just going to state briefly the dictionary definition, that it is the remittance of all or part of the temporal punishment due to sin that applies to a human soul. And the controversy came up with misunderstandings on the part of people in the Middle Ages who conflated indulgences with stipends and things, and gave the suggestion that you could buy spiritual favors, which of course is impossible. So it's not a transactional or economic thing.
So simply just thinking the best of this, it flows from the merciful heart of Christ, the mercy of the Church, and it's a merciful thing to help the human soul receive the fullness of grace and glory. And so I would encourage people to actually check it out. Don't just dismiss it, or don't just say it's an evil, wicked thing. You actually realize it's flowing from the merciful heart of Jesus to assist, to give every possibility of people's full relationship with the divine grace and eternal
life. Right, to pour out gifts from the treasury of Christ's merits, not our own. And so if we have a person that we have in mind that we want to offer it up for, you might say, and if they are not in need of it, God in his wisdom will apply it where it is necessary.
Again, that would be a deceased person.
Right.
You could apply it to yourself or a deceased person.
Right. If we're thinking of faithful departed who may be in purgatory and who are not in a position to assist themselves, but who can receive help from others too. And Father, if you wanted to just speak briefly on this other comment that was brought to us.
Okay, so somebody wrote in, we'd like to encourage, could there be a stress made on how important it is for mothers to remain with their children, if at all possible, instead of dropping them off at daycare, since raising children would be a mother's number one job. So obviously we agree with the fact that a mother is designed by God to be with her children and so forth. So in the modern day, there's all kinds of stressors on the modern family and how they make it and so forth. And of course, the ideal would be an intact family, a mother and a father together in the home. And
supported by a single income in their household.
And on the other hand, I would agree with the person who wrote in here saying, like, it's a secondary thing. It shouldn't be the primary goal is to have good daycare taking care of the children. But on the other hand, we do thank God for daycare, for those situations for parents who are not able to be in a situation where they can stay at home. So, ideally, it would be intact family being able to stay at home and do that. I think that would be at the heart of the church's identity as the family, as the Church of God. So
one of the interesting things that a person finds, especially with the early childhood center that we are running as part of our parish here at St. Mary's, is the costs and the fees that are involved. And there have been numerous families who said, the mom could take a job either in their career that they trained for in college or something else like that. But when they run the numbers, are they really getting that much farther ahead than they would otherwise when you look at what they're paying, in order to receive daycare support? And We're cognizant of the fact that in a lot of small towns within the listening area, there aren't the kind of services available that a young family might be hoping for, too. So, you know, that kind of affects what decision they are able to make.
The thought that comes to my mind, we're only a couple of weeks away from Mother's Day, right?
Right.
We celebrate that. And yes, and we do want to honor mothers, the role of mothers. And I think of, too, like, I know a number of families who are making those financial sacrifices for the mom to stay at home and be that stable spot for the children to mm-hmm. to grow and so forth. And it's very inspiring. As a priest, I'm inspired by that. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that, you know, out of compassion, we recognize the difficulties that people are facing. It's just that sometimes I think there is an image being portrayed in kind of the secular world about defining somebody by what they can accomplish, you know, outside of those more traditional roles that, you know, no one's really going to take me seriously as a trained this or a that unless I'm putting in 40 hours or more a week as a trained this or that. And that's that's an unfortunate thing, I think, that we sometimes see happen.
Our ultimate value and worth is being the image and likeness of God, His beloved son and beloved daughter. It's not in what we do, but mm-hmm. in the worldly pressures, we tend to conflate those, and we think our value is in what I do, not who I am. And so that's mm-hmm. that is a ongoing Christian struggle that to actually it's who God, my identity is beloved son of God, not what I can do for God.
Right, right. So, you know, there are lots of ways to invest in an occupation, but there is one vocation that God is giving us, and everybody, regardless of the particular state of life, is called to a vocation to holiness. So as long as we are hanging on to that and not surrendering it, then a lot of other things, despite the difficulties that we come across, are going to fall into place. Well, thank you for joining us in this Straight Talk segment. On the other side of the break coming up at the top of the next hour, we're going to talk about a wonderful event that took place in the Diocese of Fargo, and the Executive Director of RPR, Lynn Devitt, will be sharing some thoughts with us about the recently completed Diocese of Fargo Synod. That's coming up after the break. You're listening to Real Presence Live.